commissioner's going to be here or not?
Commissioner is here.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Sorry, they're better informed.
Whatever the department likes to present to us. Thank you. Please note your name for the record and give us your information.
My name is Robert Commodore. I'm the Director of Investigations at the Department of Commerce. And on behalf of Commissioner Wilson and the department, we thank you for the opportunity to speak here and acknowledge and appreciate the importance of this committee's work. In the interest of time, we're going to skip a few of the slides that we presented with you and try to get to the crux of the information that you asked us to present. Overall, the Department of Commerce, as you're aware, regulates all the insurance, different types of insurance that may be available to the victims of this tragic event. We have been trying to be very proactive. Immediately after the incident occurred, we called a staff meeting. We set up emergency staffing to make sure that we had adequate staffing to answer any questions. We were proactive in reaching out to the insurance industry. We talked to the Federation to make sure that their members were on board and weren't going to cause any additional problems and cause any additional stress to the victims. We, in fact, called five of the top insurance companies for auto, at least, that had the top market share in the state to make sure that there would be no problems with the people. We think that based upon our conversations with the industry and the number of phone calls that we did or did not get, that was that worked for all the citizens. To date, the department itself has received very few calls, actually less than 10 calls about any problems with claims on the relating to the bridge incident. We've only had actually one call from an actual survivor of the incident, and that related to their automobile. And we were able to work with the company and show them the error of their ways in not going ahead and total out the vehicles as all the other companies had done in the past. We did receive several calls from the legislature and the governor's office relating to the kids that were on the school bus, and we worked with those legislators and the Waite Park facility in terms of answering those questions. We designated one person to answer all of those questions, to be available for any of those victims if they had questions. We made ourselves available for any of the community meetings that they were holding for those victims, and we stand ready to continue doing that as necessary. The basic premise in Minnesota, of course, is being a no-fault state. The basic premise is that everyone with an automobile should be able to get some coverage. The I-35 bridge did not allow pedestrian traffic, so everyone that was on there should have had some type of coverage from no fault and PIP benefits.
Mr. Commodore, in that regard, what about people who didn't have coverage? You know, Minnesota law requires that drivers carry no-fault auto insurance coverage. What
Minnesota law does require that, and those victims that did not carry that coverage and were so required to would be excluded from any coverage under the Minnesota no-fault law. They would be able to perhaps make claims under their health insurance dependent upon the type of health insurance they had. For the most part, if it's under a fully funded plan, they should be able to get coverage under the health coverage under their health plan. But if it's a self-insured plan, some of those may have some language to say that they would be secondary to no fault and they would act as they were secondary to no fault, even if you didn't have no fault or didn't collect no fault benefits. So there may be some limitations that they may have seen from that situation.
Do you know, or if there were any victims from the bridge collapse that did not have the no-fault insurance?
We're not aware of anyone that has not had been able to get a no-fault claim paid. There are some individuals that did not have comp and collision on their vehicles, so their vehicles may not have had coverage. But in terms of personal injury, we're not aware of anyone that did not have coverage.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you. If down the road there is liability established for what caused the bridge to collapse, would these insurance companies subrogate against to get the money back that they paid out for a car claim or something like that?
There are provisions in each of the statutes for no-fault workers' comp health insurance under certain conditions, yes, that they would be able to subrogate.
Go on with your testimony,
okay.
Please.
So, again, if we start with just the automobile and try and separate that, because that's the most simplest to take care of, that's pretty much cut and dry. Either you have coverage or you don't have coverage for comp and collision. If you have comp and collision, pretty much you may be subject to a small deductible, but otherwise you would have coverage for your vehicle from this incident. And to our knowledge, I mean, we're not positive, again, because we haven't had any calls about it, but everyone that did have comp and collision, either the companies on their own have stepped up and totaled out the vehicles with no questions, or the one call that we did have, that company did come around and, in fact, wrote the people out a check for their vehicle at the price that they wanted.
Can you give us a 30-second summary of what the law requires and what the scope of potential no-fault auto insurance coverage could be?
For no-fault for the medical benefits?
For the auto.
For the auto itself?
What's the scope of the auto coverage?
The auto coverage would be just comp and collision are pretty basic. There's no dollar limits there. It's based upon the value of your vehicle. You can be subject to deductibles.
Back up. What is comp and collision?
Comp and collision is physical damage coverage for your vehicle. It's first-party coverage for the vehicle that's insured under that policy.
Is that required by law?
It is not required by law. The only thing that's required by law is the personal injury protection and the liability coverage. Okay, but comp and collision are not required. They're fairly inexpensive to get, and most people that have newer cars are, in fact, required by their lender, if they have a loan on it, to maintain comp and collision on it. But a number of people that have older vehicles choose not to insure, basically self-insuring for those.
And would you also please explain the personal injury protection and the liability?
Personal injury protection is kind of twofold. There's up to $20,000 that's available for medical insurance or medical expenses, and then there's another $20,000 that's available for income, lost income, and replacement services. There's another small amount that's available for funeral expenses. Liability would be liability to a third party if you cause them some damage.
And those two pieces are required by law?
Yes. There are certain minimums that are required by law. Additional amounts can be purchased if you so desire, but the minimums are for the no fault is the 20-20-20.
So for purposes of this bridge incident, we're not really looking at liability coverage so much. We're looking at the personal injury protection or the PIP,
yes, sir,
coverage for the individual's home medical losses and stuff like that, and also the comprehensive and collision damage to cover their vehicles.
Is, yes, that
right? Okay. Any questions raised by my questions there? Okay. Why don't you go on?
Okay. So that's pretty much it for the car. Again, for the PIP, they have up to $20,000. They can also, after they exhaust that, they can go to their health insurance that could be available through a single plan, a group plan, or a self-insured plan. There are some maximums on those, but anywhere from $1 million to $5 million, depending upon the plan that's in force there. If, in fact, the expenses exceeded that, there would be the ability for that person to purchase additional coverage through the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association and get some additional insurance.
Could they purchase that coverage after the fact?
They can purchase it after the fact, because in this situation they reach a certain criteria that are exceptions into in this situation. They would have to max out on any other available insurance and thus have no other insurance available to them.
Okay, so if they exhausted all of their medical coverage that they had through auto no fault and through health insurance, they could turn to the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association, MCHA, and purchase health insurance, basically.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Commodore, for your testimony. I just want to clarify, you mentioned that in the personal injury that there's a $20,000 cap, which I take
yes,
it
sir.
To mean that that's the maximum person can insure himself or herself for.
That's the maximum under the minimum that has to be purchased is $20,000 cap. They can purchase additional levels.
So thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought you said that that was the cap on what they could insure themselves, but there really is a person could be insured for personal injury far
yes.
beyond that if they.
Oh. The vast majority of the people do not have anything above that, but it can be purchased.
Okay. Senator Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to our witnesses from the Department of Commerce. And maybe this isn't a question you can answer, and I need to pursue this further with the Department of Human Services. But AMCHA, which you referenced as a backstop for purchasing health insurance, their rates are on average 19% above high average because it's for people with significant health issues. For people with limited assets and income, would medical assistance, general assistance, medical care, the other Department of Human Service programs for persons with disabilities, TEFRA, which is available for children, would those be options for individuals who would reach this situation, or is that something I should pursue more specifically with the Department of Human Services?
For a definite answer, you would have to talk with them. It's our understanding that some of those programs would, in fact, be available for these people as a general course. But, yes, they are covered by income guidelines, so it doesn't reach to all the population that was affected. But they would be in a better position to answer that question for sure. And maybe Mr. Gross can tell you more.
Members of the committee, my name is John Gross. I'm the Director of Healthcare Policy for the department.
Could you spell your name out for the record?
G-R-O-S-S, real gross. The Representative Loeffler, like Robert is strongly suggesting, we contact the Department of Human Services. Their general number, is available, I think we've got here. But their general number is 651-431-2670 or 1-800-657-3739. But I think one of the things I remember from medical assistance is that they can go back 3 months, too, and try to compensate for people that have problems. But it's all based on your assets and income. Also, I want to emphasize that for health insurance, most policies have $4 to $5 million lifetime max. AMCHA will be their guaranteed issue policy, no questions asked, to replace if they go above that. Robert has also mentioned that by federal law, the Department of Commerce, no state can regulate self-funded employers. But we do have a working relationships with third-party administrators, and they're the ones that pay the claims, issue the policies for self-funded employers. So with that good working relationship, we can certainly assist people that have problems with that self-funded employer. I think we want to make sure that if there's any doubt, any questions, or any issues, give the department a call.
Mr. Chairman, just for a follow-up, since Mr. Gross, who I've enjoyed working with on health insurance issues, has mentioned the state agency's contact number, I should also probably, for people who are listening or in the audience, recognize and reinforce that the main access point for anyone is the county that you live in. So if you're interested in applying for exploring services, the county would actually be a good place of entry for any individual person, and particularly if you want to know about local vendors who are licensed, if you know someone needs certified home care or personal care attendants or things like that, that is also a resource in addition to the state agency.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just, I don't know, question for either one, but in terms of what insurance typically deals with, is this particular incident that we're talking about, the bridge failure, does this represent a unique or special circumstance that would be required to be treated in some unique or special way as opposed to some other kind of a accident in which there may or may not be negligence on the part of some other party? But how would you characterize what we're experiencing as in terms of its uniqueness compared to other things that go on in Minnesota?
In terms of uniqueness, I think the only thing that's clearly different from any other incident is for the coverage for the automobile itself. Typically, comp has a set list of things that it considers comp and that it will pay under comp, and certainly a bridge collapse was never anticipated, and that was one of the things that we talked to the companies about and to the Federation, to make sure that, you know, for each of these companies, no one had that great of exposure. So we encouraged them very strongly to step up to the plate here, and we didn't have to actually encourage too strongly. They were already setting plans themselves to make sure that this is taken care of. And I think everyone saw, maybe on Channel 5, they had the news story about the gentleman a month after the incident, went to see his vehicle. If you looked at the vehicle, you could see that it really didn't have any damage to it. I mean, you couldn't tell. And he sat in it, and they started it up and everything, and you couldn't tell that it had any damage. But he was coming to say goodbye to the vehicle. His insurance company had already paid him the total. And one company, you know, as they're, you know, able to do, we're saying that, you know, the person that just purchased this car for like $45,000 a few weeks before, and they were saying that, well, the damage is only $9,000. We don't total this out. And the people implored them. I think the husband wrote a letter to the president of the company. We contacted the company and said, you know, let's step up here. This is one car for you. You don't have any other exposure here. We were about to send them the video from Channel 5, and when they called us back and said, okay, we're going to take care of it. And so in terms of uniqueness, that's the only unique thing. All the other things are pretty much standard. I mean, there are some other coverages that, you know, might be available and come into play here. If they have short-term disability or long-term disability, they could have credit cards. If they have a loan on their vehicle, they might have some credit life or credit disability policies that would compensate them. A lot of the people that have the loans, you know, if the car is totaled out, depending upon how much the insurance company was going to pay them, where there was enough to cover the loan itself. And again, we haven't had any problems or calls from consumers saying that that's been an issue. But there are some other types of policies that can be purchased for that as well to cover that gap insurance. But getting back to your question, as far as the uniqueness, the only unique thing is for the automobile itself, because it's not specifically covered under the policy.
I do have a question, maybe a follow-up comment to Representative Loeffler's comment, which was, you know, MCHA may be a little more expensive because of the risk pool that they're dealing with as well. But I would suspect, and I understand the you know, the financial hardships people are going through. But if you're facing $300,000 in uncovered medical expenses, paying a somewhat higher premium per month to make sure that you don't face claims for $300,000 in medical expenses might still be quite cheap.
To Representative Loeffler's credit, I mean, it is very expensive. But as you say, you know, if you're faced with these other bills, maybe the cost isn't so much. But the whole hope is that they've already been compensated. I mean, you have to reach some very high levels of coverage under your other policies. I mean, assume if you don't have any health insurance, then, yes, you're going to go right to MCHA. But if you have any other health insurance, and here in Minnesota, because of our mandates and things, they've got a pretty good level of coverage that's available. That's not to say that some of these insurance companies may not say this is not medically necessary, or usual and customary might not reduce some of those things. And if they're seeking special treatment or something, it's not to say that they might not get coverage that way, but the necessity at that point to go to MCHA would not be there.
I just want to follow up that in Minnesota, for the private insurance market, the average lifetime max on a typical policy people can purchase is between $4 and $5 million.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to our witnesses. My sense has been generally the health care providers in our state, particularly the hospitals, but I think other individual providers have long experience in dealing with accident victims of all kinds, and they tend to understand that sometimes it takes a while for who's responsible to get settled out. And I have not heard of any complaints, but I just wanted to see if you have heard of any complaints of either insurance companies or individual health providers putting stress on surviving families for compensation. I haven't heard of that, but I don't know that that isn't the case as well.
And again, we stand ready to answer any of those questions, but again, we haven't received any calls from consumers about this, so we have not heard any complaints at this point. But our number is available, and we try to make it available in every way that we can to direct calls to us about that. But we have not received – we've only received, as I said, one call directly from a consumer regarding this incident.
What number would they call if they had questions?
296-2488, and the 800 number is – the 800 number is good here in Minnesota, 1-800-657-3602.
Thank you.
My suggestion, if anybody is has both auto and health insurance or any other policy, is simply just file a claim with all the entities. And then if there's some repercussions where they're saying, well, we're secondary or something like that, then we certainly give us a call and we can verify all that.
It's beyond the principle.
Mr. Chair, I'm seeing a disconnect between what you guys are saying and this pile of letters that we have from the survivors. And it's mainly, I think, maybe in the mental health arena.
I know.
It seems like they're talking about if it wasn't for the Red Cross or the Salvation Army arranging maybe some mental health sessions with a therapist or something like that, that they're not being treated for that. So how do we address this? Because it seems like there's a need and they're not getting the proper treatments or what they should be getting.
Senator Olson, it really would depend on the health policy's benefits. For example, if a person had purchased coverage through a health maintenance organization in Minnesota, all HMOs have to provide mental health coverage, so it's a mandated benefit. If it's an insurance policy, they could have limited coverage or no coverage. But the vast majority of major medical health policies issued in Minnesota, either by an insurance company, HMO, or even to some degree the self-funded market, has mental health benefits within them. So it would be interesting to determine what exact problems these individual people are having.
And we certainly stand ready to help them with any of those questions. And there are going to be a lot of variables. Some of the plans going to have certain caps on there, especially if it's a self-insured plan. We stand ready. But, again, we haven't had any calls to say that these people are having problems. If they're having problems, please, please call us.
Mr. Chair, follow-up. I guess this is maybe what's bothering me is that they're not contacting you. Should your office maybe make the effort on your side and say, look, we recognize this is an unusual circumstance. Is everything happening for you? You know, are you getting the medical treatment you need? Has your car been replaced? Okay, we've heard the cars have been replaced. But is your medical going okay? Because these letters are speaking differently than what I'm hearing.
All I can say is that, I mean, the letters have not come to us. We have not had any complaints to us. We did try, as I mentioned earlier, we reached out and went to a couple meetings at the Pillsbury House with the kids on the bus. If there's some other avenues, we would certainly be willing to participate in that. We did issue some press releases at that time, giving out our number and imploring people to call us if they had any questions.
I think I can add a little bit here. The governor has appointed a person within the administration, Kim Peck, to sort of act as a focal point to assist victims or survivors in dealing with these resource questions. And so I think we'll get more contact information on her a little bit later, but she'll be in a position to facilitate some of the connections, I think, that you're raising. Sure.
And thank you for that, because on the Bridge site, they did give a number that they wanted all claims to go to and complaints, and the same as happening with the flood and things. And I forgot to mention that part. I'm sorry.
Also, Senator Olson, looking at the large amount of handouts we received today, there are, like you said, some people making some comments. So either the governor's office or the Department of Commerce or the health department who regulates the HMOs will make an initiative to contact each one of those individuals that we're aware of and talk to them.
Is there anything else from the Department of Commerce at this time?
I think that's it. We did give you provide you a little flow chart to show you and each of the types of incidents for regular motorists, for the employees on the job, a little flow chart as to where they would go for their insurance, as well as for the passengers on the bus. And because of the time, we will not go through those. But if you certainly have any questions today or any time, please feel free to call me.
We appreciate that, and the information you have provided to the committee is publicly available as well for anyone who's interested. I do have one or two quick questions or maybe comments. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Ordinarily, if someone has receives medical care due to injuries arising out of an accident or something like that, the provider of the medical care, while the bills may run up while the care is being provided, they typically will hold off on trying to collect their bills until the underlying liability questions get resolved. So if someone runs up $100,000 in hospital bills, the hospital's not going to file suit against them within 30 days to try to collect that $100,000. You know, they'll wait and see what happens in terms of liability coverage. If there's a recovery made, they'll get a letter of protection perhaps from a person's lawyer to make sure any recovery will then help pay the hospital bills, that kind of thing. So people shouldn't get unduly nervous at this stage in the process about medical bills that are piling up until some of these other questions get sorted out. I just want to at least make sure that was part of the public record.
And that's correct, and I appreciate that comment. I would add, however, that the no-fault law requires payments right away. So at least the $20,000, up to that $20,000, there should not be any delays in questions of liability or whatever in making those payments for those people. And also in terms of the replacement services and loss of income that they might be able to collect under that policy. Granted, it's only $250 a week. Maybe it's not enough, but it is something that they can collect, and they should be able to collect that right away. The law would require the insurance company to pay that within 45 days of the time the claim was made.
One other thing, I don't see anything in the materials. I would assume that there's no role for homeowners insurance.
I didn't put it in because it would be such a small thing. Homeowners would be involved if there was any personal property in your car and that was destroyed as a part of this. So any of the cars that were certainly in the water and had personal items in there, those claims would be made under your homeowner's policy.
Any other questions from the committee? Thank you very much. We appreciate your information and your testimony here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to ask is MnDOT have someone here? I know they provided. Would you please come forward? You have provided us with some information as well. Here, our goal here, just so people can understand, in about 15 minutes, we want to break for lunch. Maybe it'll go faster than that, not sure. But and then we intend to reconvene at 1:15 sharp out of respect for the Commissioner of Finance's schedule, who has gone off to eat lunch right now, I assume, so we can start at 1:15. So go ahead, please identify yourself for the record and spell your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bernie Arsenault. I am the Director of the Office of Traffic Safety and Operations for MnDOT. My last name is spelled A-R-S-E-N-E-A-U. And I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for the opportunity today to briefly discuss MnDOT's role with respect to claims against the department.
Mr. Arsenault, before you continue, I just want to say from a schedule standpoint, the 15 minutes is for you and for the Department of Administration, just so we try to get that. If for some reason we aren't able to cover all the information that we really want to cover, then, you know, we can deal with that.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I expect my comments to be brief, and I'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have. So I've provided the committee a little summary here that I'm going to work off of with my comments. First of all, I want to let you know that tort claims against the Minnesota Department of Transportation are handled through the Tort Claims Unit, which is a part of our office or my office. And basically what we do is we provide support for the Attorney General in defending MnDOT against claims or for claims against the department. Each year we handle about 250 claims. About 10 to 15 active lawsuits are ongoing at any given time. Our role is to provide information to the Attorney General, assist MnDOT personnel in preparing for depositions and court appearances and so forth. Sometimes we testify on behalf of the department at depositions and trials, or we help speak for MnDOT at those same things. We also evaluate claims and negotiate and approve settlements. We make those determinations in conjunction with the Attorney General and their opinions and information that they provide us. The role of the Department of Administration's risk management is associated with our handling of these tort claims. Risk management actually handles those tort claims that are covered by insurance, and for MnDOT, those things include things like our fleet. So if there's a snowplow crash or accident involving a snowplow, that is handled completely through risk management, and they would investigate everything associated with that and move that forward. For MnDOT, though, for other claims against MnDOT, that's a little different because we are uninsured, as many other state agencies, and for tort claims against us, and these are things like pothole claims all the way to design or traffic control type claims of negligence. We provide the support for the AG in developing the information that's necessary to make those ultimate decisions. And then again, with the support of the Attorney General and the information that they provide us, we make the ultimate decision whether to settle or to deny and maybe take to trial and ultimately litigate. As far as risk management and MnDOT's relationship, we're in fact risk management's client, and we pay for services provided by risk management. Again, the individual agencies still make the determinations whether to pay or deny, and that's true for MnDOT as well. In terms of the numbers of claims that we've received, we have received 15 formal claims so far. We've identified here the different types of claims that we've received. The status of those is that they are being aggregated and tracked, but no further action is being taken on them at this time while we await decisions by this committee and others on how we're going to pursue these claims that result from the collapse of the 35W bridge.
Representative Ansel.
You characterize claims by a category. Could you tell me what a business access type is?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. Business access would relate to the fact that now a very critical link in our system has been severed. And so it requires roundabout routes, and sometimes access to business is not, as it were. We see that a lot with construction. When we pursue construction on a trunk highway system, we sometimes make it difficult for the public to get to those businesses, and we deal with them.
Mr. Chair, follow up. And so
yes.
You only have how many business access claims?
At this point, two.
Really? That strikes me as grossly low.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative, I think that we all recognize that this is not a complete, I mean, that there are certainly more claims to come in on all of these areas. I think there's been just some waiting and seeing how things progress. And finally, we did set up a number very shortly after the collapse for those persons that did want to make a claim, and that number is referenced in your handout material there. And so if MnDOT does receive a claim on its own, because we receive a lot of claims through the department, we are forwarding those to Risk Management Unit in order to continue to track them as they're doing with the other claims. With that, I'd just open it up to questions.
Thank you. Are there any further questions? Senator Olsen.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. If in fact there is liability determined on the bridge collapse, would MnDOT have some retaliation on the replacement cost of the bridge?
Mr. Chair and Senator, what I'm hearing you ask me is if there is liability, and I assume you're talking about liability against someone other than MnDOT.
Correct.
And would that be able to be utilized to pay for the bridge? And I'm not sure of that answer. I think that's an Attorney General question.
Oh, he ducked out again.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony today. Department of Administration.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm Philip Blue. That's PhillipBlue. I'm the director of Risk Management Division.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Tom Chuckel, Chukel, and I'm the claims manager.
Okay. In the interest of time, the Risk Management Division serves as the state's own internal insurance company, and we write property and casualty lines, which are property, auto, and general liability for state agencies, and also in some cases political subdivisions, but we do very little in that area. It's primarily state business. The real interest in this conference would be the claim side, and in the interest of time, I'll turn it over to Mr. Chuckel to discuss the claim issue.
Background in the handout, the first five pages is just general background, so I would go to the last two or three pages outlining the claims process that the state handles. And this is the process we have for all claims, as well as the types of claims from the bridge collapse. Those are the two central issues that the committee was asking about, so I was just going to open it up for questions to respond to those.
Are there any questions from members of the committee? I do have a question. First of all, how would someone make a claim?
We established a helpline number 24 hours after the accident happened, and if people would call that number, they will receive a claim form very shortly thereafter to submit to us.
And does a claimant need to have a lawyer in order to make a claim?
No, they do not.
Senator Olsen?
So relatives of people who didn't survive the bridge collapse, would they say we're claiming $1 million and submit it to you guys? What's the process that would take then if that's the amount they submit?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, the claims helpline I wanted to point out was area code 612-766-3920. This is to gather just preliminary information. This in no way establishes the amount of the claim that they would be paid in the event the state decides to pay claims.
Following up on that, if I may, with the testimony from the MnDOT, with a couple of claims filed for death, but no amount on there. So then you're saying you guys are just really acting as a clearinghouse at this time to just gather information?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olsen, that is correct. And we would encourage people to file claims with us so we could get a little better handle on what's coming in, what our exposure is.
Representative Loeffler?
To Mr. Chairman and to our witnesses, if you could address whether there's any, I mean, I can understand for your purposes you'd like to kind of know what's out there, but for looking at it from the potential claimant's perspective, is there any advantage, disadvantage to them filing later? I'm sure many of them are still just even trying to figure out what the extent of the injuries are, what the rehab process will offer. And, you know, could for the record just say whether there's any advantage or disadvantage to them in terms of going through this claims process at this point?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, I would defer that question to the attorneys that are representing the claimants. I do not know what their strategy might be to not send them in fairly quickly.
Any other questions? We do have written materials, the copies of the information that's been covered, and so that's also publicly available for anyone who would like to have it. Thank you for helping us fill in the process here. We know this sounds like it's being handled sort of in the usual course of claims that come in against the state, acknowledging the unusual circumstances under which they're coming in. We appreciate the work that you're doing.
Mr. Chair, I may have a question directed maybe towards you or to these folks. It seems like we're hearing a number of people are collecting information, and are they the clearinghouse, or is the governor's point person, or who's coordinating all of this?
Well, the impression I get, and I can certainly be corrected if I'm wrong, but that in terms of formal claims, if something goes into MnDOT, it will be referred over to the Risk Management Division of the Department of Administration, and where they will reside until some further decisions are made about how to handle claims. As I understand, the governor has appointed a point person to assist people in understanding the process, where they can file claims, to help them understand other options that might be available to them, other programs within state government or county governments that they might be able to turn to for some immediate assistance or interim assistance, to kind of act as an ombudsperson to work their way through the different bureaucracies that might be involved here.
So then these people are the key collectors of the information and the claims?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Is that an accurate statement?
Correct, for liability claims.
For liability claims, okay. Any other questions? All right, we're going to take a break for lunch. It's now about 20 minutes to 1. We're going to reconvene at 1:15.
No one else then.
Thank you, and we'll see you at then.
Interesting.